today. Claudio with a chance of Mitrovic as the Leicester legend lands at the Cottage. Meanwhile, Premier League organises whip round for departing figure who's benefited sides up and down the table, but they're not sure what to give Jokanovic. Also today, we talk bad Brazilians and tear them off a strip, appropriately enough. And Nations League. Will England win the group? Will they get relegated? We need to recap again, don't we? It's all in the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. And listener, thank you so much for joining us. As we say, bon dia to Natalie Gedra.
Nice Portuguese.
Thank you so much. of ESPN Brazil.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us today, Natalie.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Obrigado.
Nada. Matt Davis Adams.
Hello.
Hi, Matt.
That's all I can offer, I'm afraid.
No, that's great. Nice English. Part of the Totally Football Show that finished 11th in the Opta Joe quiz this week. 11th is actually a really impressive number, isn't it? Because how many teams were competing, Matt?
There were 30. We were pretty happy with our overall effort because, as Duncan explained before we came on air, the stats guys always win. They're in a different league.
Right.
So we were aiming for a top half finish.
Who's in our team?
It was myself, Tom Williams, who was probably the star man, Carl Anker, Emma Saunders, and producer Ben, who actually threw in a couple of good answers himself and who I owe an apology to. He was pretty insistent that it was Dennis Wise who provided the assist for Laurie Sanchez winning goal in the 1988 FA Cup final.
Duh.
I felt it was Terry Gibson. We went with Gibson. Of course it was Wise. Easy to be wise after the event, you might say.
What other teams were competing? Was there a team from, you know...
That other lot, yeah, down the road, yeah, they beat us, unfortunately. We beat Who Scored... we beat a couple of notable, so you know, Who Scored the stats website. You'd
beat
expect
the Daily
them
Mail.
To be pretty good. Beat the Daily Mail, yeah, yeah. Always nice. But yeah, as we say, room for improvement.
Mid-table.
First effort this year, mid-table finish, perfectly respectable,
right.
Particularly given that we had two millennials in our team for whom a lot of the questions were pre their time and they offered up that excuse fairly readily.
Okay. Well, anyway, that quiz, which has become a bit of an institution in the whole kind of sports broadcasting industry, put together as ever by Opta's estimable Duncan Alexander, the oily sailor who sails the statistical seven seas, as producer Ben likes to call him. And here he is with us.
I should point out I didn't write the quiz. It was
did you not?
An esteemed colleague of mine, Tom.
Okay. All right.
But he did a good job, yeah.
All right.
I read the questions out.
Did you?
Mm.
Excellent. What was your favourite question? Have you brought questions
I've
with
you?
I've
got some of the questions, yeah. So if you want to go through some of them,
would you enjoy that? No Googling now, yeah? Okay, let's have one now and then maybe some later on.
Okay, let's start with who is the top scoring Premier League player who scored all of his goals in the 1990s? So 100% of his goals came in the 90s.
Right, and who would that be? Should we say now or what?
Well, we need to give the listener a little bit of a chance.
Well, I don't know who it is. Matt, you were there.
I remember that one, actually.
Okay, all right, let's now have a go with that. As we say, item one this week, gotta love Fulham. What a lovely club they are. Not only do they have that gorgeous riverside walk, but they've enlivened an international week by changing their manager and not bringing in Sam Allardyce or David Moyes, but Narrative's very own Claudio Ranieri. And this is the best bit, they did it on a Wednesday, not at like midday on Thursday, as is usually the case. Anyways, you've seen Slaviza Jokanovic sacked, Shade Khan bringing in Ranieri to try and turn things around at bottom of the table Fulham. Did you know, Natalie... Gabriele and Michael, we were discussing Ranieri on our Golazzo sister podcast yesterday, all about Italian football. Gabriele dropped the nugget that in net spend terms, Fulham were the third biggest spenders in all of Europe last summer.
I knew they were big spenders, but oh my God, third?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, not exactly getting what they invested for, right?
Are you excited by this news about Ranieri?
Very much. Honestly, when I got the news on my cell phone. I just looked at it and I screamed. I was like, whoa, Ranieri is back. How entertaining is that? Because he's such a good character, you know? He's very charismatic. He's going to do well for the self-esteem of the club because even though people that don't like Fulham that much, I think everybody kind of likes Ranieri. He's so likable.
Who are these people who don't like Fulham? Are they...
Yeah, that's true.
But anyway, yeah, it's nice and nice. It's like, you know, say Mourinho going to Man United was perfect because plenty of people have difficulty with both. And I think they both enjoy that, don't they?
It's quite a contrast from Jokanovic, definitely, because he always had that sort of grizzled, slightly narked look about him. So they've sort of gone from one extreme to the other. Just that thing on the 100 million, I would suggest that it's not like Jokanovic said, I want all these players and that's who they got. I think it's probably quite easy to say, oh, well, he spent all that money and it didn't really work for him. I doubt, I'm sure he had some sort of approval.
You can definitely buy too many players or loan too many players as well. I mean, that, you know, Fulham have made 33 changes to their starting 11 this season, which is more than any other team. Compare that to Wolves, who've made two.
That's even more than they've conceded goals.
Yeah, which is going some. And they've brought in the Tinkerman, who isn't the Tinkerman anymore, because when Leicester won the league, he named an unchanged team 15 times. So, yeah, I think, you know, he'll bring some organisation in.
Well, that's right. He won the league with Leicester, a team who seemed in equally a dire predicament as the Cottagers do now. How much can we draw parallels with that extraordinary experience? How about we dial up our friend Jonathan Northcroft from the Sunday Times? Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem.
Big Claudio back in the big time, and people's thoughts turn to when he took little Leicester all the way to the very top. In your opinion, having written the book on that whole phenomenon, how much of it was down to him and his tactics and skills, and how much because they had Kante and Vardy and Mahrez?
Yeah, I think we'll still be unpicking that one for years to come. I think it was a classic mix, really. The other thing to throw in is how well-structured Leicester were. So you had a club that had been kind of built very carefully by Nigel Pearson, who had the sports science department, the scouting department, everything kind of nicely aligned the way that clubs should be. And then, of course, they'd made this great signing of Kante, which they didn't know at that point. Claudio certainly didn't know, but that was to prove really important. But I think what happened was he brought his nous, his tactical skills, but also his aura, his leadership to the sort of front of house, while leaving in place what was already there. And there was an intelligence to what he did, because he spent a lot of the early part of his Leicester reign, first few weeks in pre-season, just saying very little, realising what was good, realising what he needed to keep in place, and doing so. And then, as he said, you know, he sprinkled his little Italian tactics, I think was his quote on the top.
Of course, he doesn't have the luxury of a pre-season here, just this brief international break. How relevant, then, do you think the Leicester experience is? Do you see any of the same elements there?
I do. I think one of the things that maybe was missed about what he did at Leicester and is missed about him, because he's got this kind of fun, sunny persona. At heart, he's a very organised Italian coach who's extremely good at organising the defensive side of a team. And that was part of his job at Leicester. They'd conceded 55 goals the year before he came. They'd third worst defence in the league, almost got relegated. And then they had the second best defence in the league when he was there, and they won the title. And he spent a lot of time, he changed him from three at the back, he spent a lot of time just drilling a regular back four that we all remember now, you know, Huth, Morgan, Simpson and Fuchs, absolutely drilling them. In a way, what he can bring to this is what, you know, a Sam Allardyce will bring to a relegation situation, which is organising a team, getting the clean sheets and building from there. That is kind of what he did at Leicester. It's just he built to a far greater extent than was imagined.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Jonathan Northcroft, whose book, Fearless, The Amazing Underdog Story of Leicester City, The Greatest Miracle in Sports History. It's a lot of title, isn't it? But just call it Fearless. Anyway, that's available right now. I bet there'll be a run on that. He likes a long title, doesn't he?
Yes, he does, because last time he was in, he was promoting his book, Deadlines and Darts with Delhi, My World Cup Diary, England's Rebirth in Russia, and Other Unexpected Tales.
Brilliant. Well, that's chapter one, pretty much, already, isn't yeah. it? Brilliant. Do you think, is that because they give him a word count, and he just like, I don't know, anyway, writing a book.
Does the front cover count toward a word count?
I think it probably does. Have you ever written a book, Natalie?
I've written a dissertation.
Okay. Yeah. What was your dissertation on?
Refugees in football.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant. Well, that's a fascinating topic. Duncan, you've written a book, sorry.
Two books, yeah.
Two books now. Mm.
But I didn't include the cover in the word count, but I will from now on.
Next time. Ranieri, what a way for him to start. They've got Southampton at home, which seems pretty good. But you know what the fixtures are after that? Chelsea and Leicester. And then after that, they've got Mourinho, his old buddy.
With Man United. Narrative.
Yeah, that's...
And also, good for the title race, Ranieri's got a strangely brilliant record against Manchester City. He's won 8 and drawn 1 of his 9 Premier League games against them. So
you're kidding.
Guardiola is going to be, you know, scared, definitely.
Wow.
It's a shame there's no Premier League this weekend, because Jose could have done a press conference with SJ on his top in tribute to Jukanovic.
Yeah, funnily enough, that stressing suggestion came up in Golazo yesterday. All right, well, it is interesting what parallels there are or not with what he did at Leicester. That's not the only club that he's had certainly initial success at. Do you remember when he took over at Nantes after Leicester, where there was always that... all that business of you have to bolt the door before you decorate. And he had, I think he won 6 of his first 10 Ligue 1 games there. He's generally had a great start wherever he's been. The one that we were talking about in Golazo particularly was when he moved about 10 years ago to Parma midway through the season, and they were 18th at the time, and they had a brilliant run, and they lost 3 times in 16 games, rocketed up the table to 12th. What do you think is going to happen, Natalie?
Well, I think it was very interesting when his first interview, he mentioned very clearly his defensive work. He's proper Italian manager, so of course, and Fulham desperately needs that. So I think that's going to be interesting. And Fulham, 31 goals is like the worst defense in the Premier League. So yeah, not looking good for them. But I think Hanyeri can add up a lot in this sense. Yeah,
I think it's quite a low bar for him. You know, the reason he left Leicester was because he couldn't have repeated what he did at Leicester, but he's really only got to come in at Fulham and win sort of 6 or 7 games in 7 months. You know, a lot of people saying, can he pull off another miracle? I don't think that would count as a miracle, really.
Right.
Just a reasonable run of form.
Because it's so tight down the bottom, isn't it?
Yeah, a couple of wins. I mean, we could be looking at a season where, you know, 30, 31, 32 points is going to be enough to keep you up. So, right.
They're only 3 points off safety at the moment.
Yeah.
And Newcastle demonstrated with their back-to-back victories and racing up to, I think, where are they now? 14th, something like that? They're out of the bottom three.
Mm.
What do you think, Matt?
I think he's got more than enough about him as a manager to keep them up, particularly given some of the other teams in the Premier League. But I wonder if we may be being a little bit kind because he's such a nice fella. I mean, you mentioned Nantes. They won 4 games in the second half of the season, won 3 of his last 15 at Leicester. Obviously, the Greece thing didn't go particularly well. But you would think because of his experience of the league and also because of his experience managing multinational squads, which is what Fulham is, you know, maybe even more so than most other Premier League clubs and the defensive organisation, which is obviously the big thing. I mean, they need to... That one of the things that did for Jukanovic was that they just changed the team far too much. They've used 3 goalkeepers this season. So pick one and stick with him, I would say, would be a good way to start.
Which was very much his way at Leicester, as you were saying, Duncan.
Yeah, 15 games without a change to a starting 11, which is pretty solid.
And that worked brilliantly for Nuno. Why do more managers not do that? It's less work. You get better results.
I know. Makes sense, doesn't it?
Mm.
Working for Maurizio Sarri.
That's true. Mm. Yeah. Had to bring up Chelsea, didn't you, Matt?
But Guardiola does the opposite and it works fine as well. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, Jukanovic, Daniel Story pointing out that even though his time at Fulham has been pretty miserable, he's got an extraordinary career. He's managed 139 top flight games. Yet his CV includes 2 promotions. He's managed in the Champions League and Europa League. He's won 3 league titles, 2 domestic doubles, and he's had an invincible league season. He's gone a season unbeaten. So he'll end up somewhere soon, do you think?
Yeah, he's got the right to feel aggrieved, definitely. You know, he did really well to get Fulham promoted last season. And of course, they had a rubbish start in the Championship last season. They were down near the relegation zone in the first half of the season. So he might feel that he could have turned the situation around, particularly with... It seemed sort of strange to do it. Obviously, it's the international break, but that Southampton game feels like a very winnable game for Fulham either way. So maybe you could have built some momentum, but maybe they thought, well, games after that, very difficult, as we've discussed.
Well, that was only part one of today's rip-roaring Totally Football show. Duncan, have you got another question for us before we head into part two?
Mm.
Right, okay. Let's answer question one then. So the question was, listener...
The question was the top scoring player in the Premier League who only scored in the 1990s. And it was Ian Wright.
Oh, you can ask Natalie.
Oh. Sorry, Natalie.
All right, we can dump
this okay.
in.
Yeah.
Would you have known that, Natalie?
No.
Okay.
Thank Ian you for Wright. Not asking, yeah.
Okay. Give us another one then, Duncan.
Okay, next up. Who was the last player to score 40 or more league goals in an English top flight season?
40 or more league goals in all competitions?
Nope, just in the league.
40 goals in a season?
Yeah. I mean, it's the sort of thing Ronaldo and Messi have done frequently, but... Yeah, who was the last player to do it in England?
Introducing Paddy Power's Beat the Drop. We're giving every customer 30 days free entry and a grand up front. It's up to you to keep it. All you have to do is answer 10 questions correctly. Play now at beatthedrop.paddypower.com.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Part two begins with some exciting news about the Premier League, who brought in Susanna Dinage as their new chief executive, or at least she will be taking over from Richard Scudamore when he leaves at the end of this season. Much interest in the fact that it's the first female league boss, and she's come from an unusual-ish background, although Scudamore was in charge of newspapers before he was at the Football League, and she's from Discovery Channel, global president of Animal Planet, actually. She also worked at MTV and Channel 5, which is a great channel, as you know. But, you know, given that TV is probably the biggest driver of football in terms of finance right now, it's the keyest element, that it kind of makes sense, I guess.
Completely. For us who work in television, we see how many things are changing in terms of broadcasting and in terms of new technologies, and nobody really knows where we are going, especially with broadcasting rights. So it's a huge deal for the Premier League, obviously, and internationally, it's the most internationalized league in Europe, with hundreds of broadcasters. So I think it was an interesting call to get someone from with such a strong background on television. And as a woman, of course, I'm happy and proud and curious to see where this is going.
Well, I was going to say me too, but yeah. problems that she, Susanna Dinage, may be facing, the whole Super League notion, not sure how real that is, consequences of Brexit, not sure how real that is either, the changing TV landscape, which you mentioned, agents and their fees, and also basically just keeping fans with some notion that football hasn't moved on and completely forgotten all about them. And probably not helpful on that last issue was this story that the Premier League are all being asked to chuck in a very big wodge for a big golden handshake, although I hear that that may not be. I'm not sure. Matt, have you got any inside info on that from Chelsea's point of view?
Well, they've all been asked to put in £250,000, haven't they, the 20 Premier League clubs. It's Bruce Buckley, who's the Chelsea chairman, as the player who's proposed this, in his role as the chair of the Premier League's nominations committee rather than in his role as Chelsea chairman. I think, actually, in a way, it's helped Susanna Dinage because the headlines are all about that, and she's kind of slipped him quite quietly into the position, so it might work out quite well for her. Obviously, it's quite a gauche thing on the face of it, but I think the thinking behind it is that, you know, the last UK TV deal was worth £5.14 billion, and it was £670 million when he joined. So if you look at it in that terms as a bonus, but whether the club should be paying it is something different. I mean, I thought maybe they could just get him a lifetime subscription to BT Sport and Sky Sports, and that's probably worth about £5 million anyway. That would be an easy way to do it, yeah.
Of course, you'd need other ones in there as well. You'd need Amazon and...
£5 million of Amazon vouchers, that would take a while to get through.
She's a Fulham season ticket holder, so you would think that she's got some sort of understanding about the issues facing supporters, particularly as it's very expensive at Fulham. So a nice quick win for her early on would be, you know, if she can get somewhere with the 20 is plenty campaign that the FSF have been trying to push through for years, that would be a good start for her PR-wise if she did something like that, and then focuses on what we've been talking about, Brexit, TV deals, etc. and so on. But it's sort of reassuring that she is a football supporter, as well as obviously a highly competent professional.
It's been a good week for her then as a Fulham season ticket holder, you know, with the change. Let's talk about some real football, eh, Duncan? Internationals, a decisive final round of the Nations League is upon us. The big question is, last time we were here, the big question was, if you win your group and you're in, say, League 3 or League 4, do you get into Euro 2020?
I haven't got a clue, to be honest.
I asked Ben to find this out definitively this morning. He says that he's even more confused than he was. As I understand it, if you win your group, well, basically there's four tiers. There's relegation from the bottom sides and promotion for the top. But the stronger sides will qualify for the finals next June. All 16 group winners will get a place in the Euro 2020 qualification playoffs. If they've already qualified, of course, through normal Euro qualifying, then the best ranked team from a lower group will be drafted in. So that's clear then, eh? The big questions anyway heading into these rounds are, What did I just say? Secondly, can England win the group after beating Spain, or might they get relegated? Netherlands, can they stay up? Might they relegate Germany? And can, Matt, Scotland make the Euros? What are you most excited by this weekend?
I think there would be something quite good for the Netherlands about relegating Germany. That's probably the most interesting thing. Obviously, we're recording on Thursday, and in terms of England's group, Spain and Croatia are playing tonight, so it could mean that's kind of a dead rubber in terms of certainly in terms of winning the group. If Spain beat Croatia, then they've done it. So I just have a bit of a problem with this international break specifically, because it's the third one of the season already, and there's ages until the next one. I think it's March usually, isn't it?
Yeah,
it just feels like the season's just got going. We're just about a third of the way through it. If this was the first international break, then great, but we've already had two, and it's just...
Yeah, I think in years, odd-numbered years, when it's the spot where you have the playoffs, it's totally fair enough. But I think in tournament years, yeah, we don't need it.
Tournament years, as in we've just had a tournament.
Yeah, and so it's just friendlies or, you know, any other newly invented tournament, a.k.a. the Nations League. So, yeah, it really does feel like it's kind of paused the Premier League and other leagues just as they're getting going.
Oh, buzzkill. I was getting quite worked up, especially as you say about Netherlands. What international fixtures? Obviously, there's two Brazil friendlies.
Yes, but actually the international break is working fine for the South Americans, because we have Copa America, and it's next June. So for all South American teams, it's good that we're having these three fixtures. Although I understand your point, but for Brazilians, it's working fine.
Right, the Copa America is going to be in Brazil.
Yes,
next summer. Does Brazil not have to qualify then?
No.
So that's why you're doing all these friendlies in places like Milton Keynes.
Oh my God, yes.
Right, that's a strange decision.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Can you tell us how that came about?
Well, negotiating friendlies, it's a complex thing that involves a few excuses and some explanations. For example, they always argue that no, it's not that every team wants to play Brazil. So it's hard to get very top teams to play Brazil, which is always a constant complaint among Brazilian fans, that we shouldn't be playing Saudi Arabia like we did, or Honduras. You know, it's very frustrating. And in terms of location, yeah, I honestly asked myself the same thing. I was like, why Milton Keynes? You have plenty going on here. But there are factors like how much they charge for rent, and there are agreements. And the Brazilian team, they have an agency that negotiates all these friendlies. So there's a lot going on. They have contracts that they have to
respect.
To respect, exactly. So first is going to be the Emirates, and then it's going to be
so the Emirates. That's Friday.
Yes, it is.
Brazil taking on Uruguay.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting for once. Yeah.
So Chito will put out a proper team for that.
Yes.
And then it's Cameroon in Milton Keynes.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do people in Brazil feel about the fact that their national team very rarely does?
It's a big complaint. And everybody's... Well, there's a consolation factor that they are expected to play a few matches before Copa America in May in Brazil, a couple of matches. So they have these contracts with where they should play in places like Saudi Arabia, like they did, and United States. And it was worse. It was worse when Dunga was the manager. It was a big problem. Brazil never played. Brazil always played in London. There's a joke among Brazilians that it's actually Brazil's home is London. It's not anywhere in Brazil. But they are trying to reconnect with their audience. And we had qualifyings before. So it's not that bad. It was worse before 2014, because every match was a friendly match because we weren't playing qualifying. And then Brazil was like all over, and it was never playing home. So now it's starting to get uncomfortable, but it's not a big deal for now.
The team includes such luminaries as Neymar. Will they be paying Neymar to clap the fans, do you think, in a similar fashion to PSG? Details of...
Yeah, he denied that.
Oh, he's denied that.
Yes, he denied that. He called it fake news.
Okay.
Well, we'll have a press conference from him today, so we might get a few answers.
Excellent.
About that. Yeah.
Okay. Best of luck with those two games then. Duncan, what's most exciting you about this international break?
Well, the return of Roux.
Okay, which is happening this evening, Thursday,
this evening,
as we record.
And, I mean, it's caused anger and anguish with some people, but, you know, I think he deserves it. Okay. I mean, it does seem a little bit like, you know, that the meme that's doing the rounds this week, the don't say it meme, where you say, yeah, it does feel like someone said, we've got a friendly against USA, don't say it, don't say it, don't say it, let's get Rooney back. But but I think it's good. He deserves it. It was notable that Peter Shilton, the man who has the most caps for England, was not happy about the man who with the second most caps for England getting an extra cap.
Will he pull level with Shilton?
No, he won't, but I think Shilton was concerned that, you know, a swift hat-trick from Rooney and he's back in rotation.
Right.
And Rooney, to his credit, said that if it was a cap that would have taken him level with Shilton or beaten him, he wouldn't have taken it. He wouldn't be doing this. But I think the reaction's been really strange. I mean, the main thing is it's about raising awareness of his charity. Mm. And he's a footballer who, obviously, he's had some black marks on his CV, maybe no more so than certain other footballers, but there's a kind of strange attitude towards him, I find, from certain sections of the English media. And, you know, this foundation that he's got that helps disadvantaged and vulnerable children, that he gave £1.6 million that he raised from his testimonial for Man United to, that seems to be his primary motivation to take part in this game, to raise awareness of that. So, you know, this kind of thing is commonplace. Podolski had one, didn't he? Schneider had one. I think he's well worth it in terms of from a football perspective. They sold 20,000 tickets in the couple of days after it was announced that he was going to be taking part in it. But I feel a bit sorry for him in that he probably thought this was quite a good sort of, you know, holistic thing for him to do, to raise awareness of his charity, which he's got. You know, there's no expectation on him to do that or have had it. And it's just a bit of a shame that it's been, oh, what are you bringing him back for? Well, because he's the record goal scorer.
But it also taps into this thing where he doesn't get enough credit for his career. You know, he's one of the greatest English players in the history of football.
That's true.
And because his best years were probably his early years, you know, he does get sort of glossed over compared to some of his peers, I think.
Hmm.
As a foreign, I can't understand why people are being so bitter about it.
About Wayne Rooney playing?
Yes, of course. You have to respect his history. And he's, like you mentioned, he's doing a good thing. I mean, stop being so bitter about it.
I think that it's to do with the way that, because of his early years and because of his stature or status within the game, he was seen as an automatic inclusion for England for so long, and the team was built around him. And I think especially in the final years of his time with England, his inclusion in England team represented the things that were holding the side back. And it was interesting how fresh the side looked without him once he'd moved on. And maybe that's why people have got this reaction to Rooney returning, if only for a brief cameo at Wembley.
Yeah, but that doesn't change everything that he did for the national team. And honestly, I just think you have to respect his history.
All right. Yeah.
It's not like he held, you know, the number nine role for England all the time, held that hostage. He played in central midfield, he played on the wing, he did what he was asked to. So, yeah.
Duncan, do you have some stats that you were going to throw at us on this, or shall I move on?
He's
quite a bit of move on if you want.
No, I've got a couple if you want.
Go on then. Oh, I don't know. Do I want them?
Well, I don't know. Might do.
Okay,
I
mean, let's hear those stats, listener.
If he
you
scores,
decide.
It's quite sad he's going to be a substitute, because the only minute Rooney's never scored in his career is the 14th, so he won't get a chance to do that.
He scored in every other minute of the game?
Yeah, between 1 and 90. So that's a shame. He can become...
Do you mean for England or in general?
No, just in his career.
Oh, right. He's still playing for DC United, of course.
True, but maybe they don't have the 14th minute in America. I don't know. I'd have to research that.
Do go on, Doug.
If he scores, he'll be the third England player to score 20 or more goals at Wembley. So that's a more realistic target.
Okay. Yeah.
So, but yeah.
All right, Wayne Rooney. But anyway, after that, England will be playing Croatia at Wembley. And as you say, Matt, that might have less riding on it, because Croatia might already be relegated after their clash with Spain this evening. Of course, it's got echoes of last time Croatia visited ahead of Euro 2008, which England weren't able to attend after that 3-2 defeat.
No, England beat Croatia qualifying for the 2010 World Cup at Wembley, because I was at that game.
Oh,
so that would have been 0-9. They beat them like 5-0 or something.
Oh, yeah,
ridiculous.
Okay. All right, but echoes of that as well then. Yeah, I mean, the big thing for England is what? Seeing if they can follow on from the fantastic win away in Seville.
Yeah, I think so. It's almost a shame that the scheduling of the games is that the USA one is first, because it's going to sort of kill the momentum. We expect it to be a sort of B team tonight for England. You know, people like Lewis Dunk maybe getting a run out, Jadon Sancho potentially starting. So whether that checks the momentum from the Spain game, we'll see. But hopefully they can carry that through. There's a couple of interesting selection things. Obviously, Ben Chilwell played really well against Spain, but Luke Shaw's back in, so see who plays left back. Or Callum Wilson get a start. I sort of think that he might actually work quite well with Harry Kane rather than as a supplement, you know, as a substitute for him. And does Gareth Southgate prefer Ruben Loftus-Cheek or Ross Barkley? They're both in the squad. Will either of them play? Harry Winks as well, you know, did well against Spain. So yeah, there's plenty of interest, but hopefully there's a lot riding on the game rather than
nothing.
Yeah,
if Croatia were to beat Spain, inflict another defeat on them, there would be almost too much riding on it. England would be poised to either win the group or, with defeat, get relegated. Wow. Anyway, we shall see. Croatia, of course, yet to score in the Nations League, so we'll see how they get on. Also worth keeping an eye on, Wales are taking on Denmark on Friday with promotion from Group B on the line. Wales topping the group right now. Denmark have a game in hand. The Danes got the better of the Welsh, didn't they, earlier in their Nations League campaign. And Christian Eriksen with the brace there. But Wales have got Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey back.
Have you seen the Ryan Giggs quotes about Gareth Bale? I've not seen many of the games because they're not on Sky anymore. They're on 11 Sports and I haven't got that.
Yep.
11 Sports replied via social media, we can give it Giggsy till the end of the season, which
yeah.
I thought was
quite
nice.
But I don't think they ever got back in touch.
Right, okay.
I don't think Giggsy ever did.
But I mean, you know, he could always fly out to Spain and watch a game, but I suppose, couldn't he?
If Bale was playing.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, Northern Ireland, Scotland and Republic of Ireland, you interested in those? Natalie, not so much, perhaps. Duncan, you interested in those? Situation there? Okay, let me tell you that in Wales's group, Republic of Ireland will be relegated unless Denmark lose to Wales and unless Republic of Ireland then beat Denmark away, so not looking good for them. Also in League B, second tier, Northern Ireland need results to go their way. They need to beat Austria and they need Bosnia-Herzegovina to beat Austria as well. A league further down, League C, Scotland can be promoted if they beat Albania away and Israel at home. Not only would they be promoted, but they would guarantee themselves a Euro 2020 qualification playoff spot. How exciting is that?
It's quite extraordinary given the pressure that Alex McLeish seemed to be under last time we were recording a pod around an international break. I mean, whether they can win those two fixtures, I suppose, is a different matter. But
yeah. So they're not the only unlikely team who might be featuring at Euro 2020. Gibraltar. Do you remember Gibraltar? They hadn't had a competitive win in 22 matches. They've now had two in a row. If they get another one, let me just find this info here. They're playing Armenia on Friday. If they're then going to be taking on Macedonia in Macedonia next week. If they win that group, they're in the qualification playoffs. Wow, Duncan.
It's up for grabs.
It certainly is. Hey, listener, do you want the answer to Duncan's question? Is that the only thing you're still with us for? Go on then, Duncan.
So the question was, who was the last player to score 40 or more league goals in an English top flight season?
Right. And Natalie, would you like to have a go at this?
No, I think I'm best.
Matt?
Yeah.
Wasn't Tony Cotty, was it?
No. You were at the quiz,
yeah,
weren't you? It was Jimmy Greaves.
Oh, really?
So quite a long time ago.
That is a long time ago. Huh. Okay. Well, listen, we're going to take a very quick break, after which we've got a little bit more Nations League stuff as we touch on the very interesting couple of matches that await Netherlands, potentially the keyest games of all, actually, and also talk about the worst Brazilian players ever and other stuff. Hey, big shout here from a listener for our favourite Arnold Schwarzenegger films. There you go, that's one to think on. Anyway, lots of good stuff coming up on this Totally Football show.
Listeners, it's the international break, so what better reason to expand your horizons and have a read of The Economist? Because you listen to The Totally Football Show, you can get yourself a free copy of the magazine right now by texting the word football to 78070. The Economist is about far more than just economics and finance. For 170 years, it's been covering a range of subjects from politics and business to science, technology, arts and even sport. For example, there's a great piece in the archives about how, between 2004 and 2016, each time a player scored at either the World Cup or the Euros, his transfer value went up on average by 13%. That led Real Madrid to splurge €80 million on James Rodriguez after his 6 goals in Brazil, which was around twice as much as he was worth based on his career up to that point.
It didn't take Real long to realise that, as usual, they'd overspent. So like most clubs, they're now using cold hard statistics and data rather than a 5-week tournament when deciding to sign a player. Or not sign a player, as was the case this summer. Anyway, it's nuggets like that that helps economist readers prepare for what's going on in the world around them. A world in which facts count far more than ever. Get your free print copy now. Just text football to 78070. That's football to 08070.
Now, Monday we were discussing how many matches you can watch at the same time. Duncan, how many matches can you watch at the same time?
I've watched 10 at the same time before.
Really?
Yeah.
How?
With difficulty, but I did it. Yeah.
Which 10 matches were happening simultaneously?
On, like, the last day of the Premier League season when you have the 10 concurrent ones.
All right, so. And you had 10 screens.
Yeah, I was sat in front of 10 screens. I can't say I took in a lot from all of them.
But, right, but you were able to keep across.
I had darting eyes like that.
As, I imagine you did.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
As things happen.
Natalie?
I thought I was rocking with 4, but you say 10?
For me, you're rocking. That's nonsense. You can 10. Be in front of 10 games, but you're not watching them. But 4, that's impressive. Raphael Honigstein, friend of the pod and football fans everywhere, was talking about the fact that he can only do one, or he only wants to do one at a time. And both Vishnu Kumaraswamy and Daniel Diamond asked the same question. Does Rafa being able to watch only one game at a time make him monogamist? Monogamist.
Very good.
That is good.
Yeah.
Right, back to the internationals. And I'm excited by Netherlands. They might be back, listeners. They're going to be taking on France on Friday, and then Monday they have the chance to relegate Germany. Now, Matt, you were talking about this, the France game, first of all, as being really exciting.
Yeah, so Germany will be relegated if the Netherlands beat France.
Oh, really?
On
that'll
Friday.
Be gone.
Yeah, yeah. Damn. If France win that game, then Germany need to beat the Dutch on Monday to survive. So that's kind of what we want to happen, I think, just for that game to be
still in play.
Yeah.
France never lose, though. They're the world champions and all that.
Yeah, this is true. They've got loads of injury problems, though. Pogba, Martial, Lacazette, Mendy. Interesting Ooh. That... Aymeric Laporte still doesn't get a call-up for France, and Mamadou Sakho does. Some talk that it's maybe because, as is the way these days, he did an applause emoji to Rabiot tweeting his displeasure at not being in the World Cup squad, and Deschamps has held that against him. But obviously, we've been talking about Laporte on the show in recent weeks and how brilliant he's been for City, so that does seem slightly odd. But yeah, you wonder if certainly Martial's in great form at the moment. Lacazette's had a good start to the season too, so maybe not that straightforward for France. But Germany, goodness me,
they did beat the Dutch 2-1 in September with Mbappe and Giroud, after Ryan Babel, who's still very much a feature for the Netherlands, had equalised. Wow. Okay, then Monday it's Netherlands hosting Germany, who they beat 3-0 last time out. Wow, that's one to follow, isn't it?
Potentially be Joachim Löw's last game in charge.
That's true.
How long have we've been saying that?
That it's his last game?
Yes.
Not, we haven't been doing it for long. Have you been doing it for a long time?
Oh, yes, yes.
Really?
Yes. Okay. Well, I'm Brazilian. I'm always thinking that the manager is going to be sacked.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and he must be... That's a departure you, as Brazilians, particularly want to see, I imagine.
Yes, yes. It's a delicate spot for us. Mm. Yes.
Super. Another quiz question, Duncan, before we address the final and meatiest topic of this Totally Football show.
Okay, let's go for which two players scored in all three World Cups in the 1990s.
Say that again.
So the three World Cups in the 90s, 90, 94, 98.
Yes.
And two players scored in all three editions. Who are they?
I got one of these on the night, I remember that.
Okay.
And you should get it, James.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. And then another one. Natalie, got any thoughts on that?
I'm just going to leave it to you guys.
Okay. Yeah. All right, listen. That's a doable one, isn't it, Duncan? Or is there a twist in that?
No, I think it's probably the two players you would be thinking of if you got the right ones.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. Well, the answer coming up very shortly, as is our discussion about bad Brazilian players and more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsors of Melchester Rovers. Find out more at roytheroversofficial.com.
Natalie, basically your job for ESPN is to travel up and down the Premier League?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Very exciting.
Is it very exciting?
Yes, I love it. Absolutely. We broadcast the Premier League, so there's plenty going on for us here.
Is it popular in Brazil?
Very popular. The ratings are very high.
Okay.
Yes, and there's this young generation that prefers European teams than the Brazilian ones.
Really?
Yes, yes, it's very common.
Which European teams do they particularly like?
Well, the Premier League is the most popular league. Chelsea is very popular in Brazil, of course, because so many Brazilians. United, of course. City is growing. Mm-hmm. With everything that's been happening in the past few years. And of course, Barcelona and Real Madrid and, yeah, basically this.
From a Brazilian point of view, it's good that, you know, Liverpool and City have both got Brazilian goalkeepers.
Yes.
And they've kind of made goalkeeping cool. You know, my son is a goalkeeper and it's suddenly become a position that people want to do because it's, you know, it's cool.
Yeah, that's true. And there's a big argument among Brazilians who's the top one, because Alisson was top one, no questions about it. But because Ederson didn't play in Brazil that much, so he's not that popular mm-hmm. among Brazilians. And Alisson played in Internacional for a while, and, well, everybody knows him. But now that Ederson's doing so well in City, and City's getting popular in Brazil, and there's this discussion now. And they turned into a very cool thing and different.
Yeah, they've both got pass completion rates of 80% or higher, which if you go back, you know, even most of the Manchester United midfield in the treble season didn't have figures that good. So that kind of illustrates how much football's changed in the last 20 years.
It's interesting to see the goalkeepers. When we're covering the Brazilian national team, it's interesting to see the training.
Mm-hmm.
Because their accuracy in with their feet is like, it's very entertaining.
Do they get on?
Yes, very much.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, yes. They're quite different, but they get along just fine. And the goalkeeper coach is Taffarel, and he was the goalkeeper in 1994 World Cup, and everybody loves him. He's such a character. So it's a very tight group. The goalkeepers group is very tight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of Taffarel. 1990 as well, he was a Brazilian keeper, wasn't he?
1994, he defended a few penalties for us in the final against Italy.
I didn't ask, is Arthur in the squad, the Brazil squad, the Barcelona midfielder?
Arthur, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
And he's been in every call-up since Russia. Actually, many people thought he would be in Russia,
mm-hmm.
and he wasn't. It was a big point of discussion, but he's been called up ever since, and he's considered one of the players that is on the base of this new, not so new Brazilian team, but he's one of the players that's gaining most respect and most space. Him, Richarlison, Coutinho for sure, but Coutinho was around, but he's young, so but Richarlison was a very positive surprise as well, because at first he wasn't even called for Titi. A player got injured and then he got called up, and he just stayed for these three call-ups, and he's very charismatic. Yesterday he gave a press conference that was very entertaining.
Richarlison.
Yes, he was telling how he flunked arts in his school, that he was terrible in school, and his uncle was his teacher in arts class, and he thought, oh, I'm not doing anything because my uncle is passing me, and he flunked. So
right, okay.
Yeah.
It's
a good punishment for the school, though. If you don't knuckle down at school, we're going to send you to Watford. Well, it would work on me.
So, but he's now a proper fixture, Richarlison.
He is.
Who else are you excited about in the Brazil side?
Arthur is the most spoken about player. And I think on the defensive side, I really like Marquinhos.
Mm-hmm.
He's young and he's experienced at the same time. He's 24, but he's been with the national team for so long and he has such a presence there. And he's obviously going to be one of the starting players for Brazil. We thought that would happen actually at Russia. Many people were surprised that he was replaced by Thiago Silva, but it showed to be a very wise decision from Titi, because Thiago Silva was amazing at the World Cup.
Apart from against Belgium with that chance.
Yeah, but even so, he's pointed as like one of the top players in the Brazil, if not the best player, mm-hmm. the best Brazilian player in the World Cup.
Right.
So yeah, I really like Marquinhos and Casemiro. Casemiro.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, Casemiro is amazing, and I think he should be captain actually, Casemiro, because he's experienced. He has good communication skills. He has a good vision of the game. But our captain is Neymar right now, so...
Ha!
Ha!
Let's talk about bad Brazilian players. That's much more fun.
Oh, yeah. Sure. We have so many good players. Let's talk about the good ones.
Everyone always talks about the good Brazilian players.
Okay, I have a few then.
All right, do you? Because producer Ben was... Well. Have you? Mm. I had a think as well, because... Yeah. Oh, go on then. Matt, you start. Do you have any...
Roque Jr. when he was at Leeds.
Yes.
Afonso Alves.
Legend,
yeah, but he one of those players who just came to England and it never happened for him. I think I was looking at this and I'd forgotten how many Brazilians Middlesbrough had for that weird spell where they just seemed to only sign Brazilian players. And
Juninho,
yeah. Juninho, Emerson, Marco Branca.
Juninho made the Premier League popular in Brazil.
Hang on, Marco Branca was Italian. You're thinking of Branco.
Branco, yes.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah.
Branco was at Genoa. Well, they get the free kick specials.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Marco Branco is very... he pretended to be someone else when I called him up once.
Did he play for Middlesbrough as well?
Yeah, he did. And then he got injured and then they stiffed him for the medical bill. He was a great striker, Marco Branco. But he doesn't, unfortunately, meet our criteria here because he's not Brazilian.
Branco, then.
And he was good. Yeah, Branco, yeah.
Kasapa, Newcastle. He wasn't very good.
I don't remember Kasapa. Who was he?
Claudio Kasapa, centre-half.
Really?
Yeah.
No. Sounds like the sort of game you download on an iPhone for 99p. Kasapa. But it's not. I've got a few if you want.
Go on then.
Brazilians have played one game in the Premier League.
All right.
There's five of them. But my three favourites are Bruno Peroni, who played for QPR once, obviously. Neil Warnock said he's already suffered a broken nose in training, so he's settling in nicely. That was a good Neil Warnock style welcome. Anderson Silva, who Everton signed in 2005 before realising he didn't have an EU passport and couldn't play, so loaned him out for a couple of years. Finally made his debut in 2007, played one game, and then they sold him to Barnsley. Not very nice. And then my all-time favourite Brazilian with one game was Glauber, who played one game.
Oh, my God.
one game for Brazil, the Brazil national team. Signed for Manchester City the day before Sheikh Mansour took over. So he really was the kind of, you know, the final old City.
Thaksin Shinawatra.
Yeah, but it's very much a kind of you know, end of an era. So, he played one game for City.
He played a game for the national side, which sounds surprising. But was that back in the era when there was all sorts of talk about people would effectively pay to get their players into the national side because then you could sell them to European clubs for a much greater price?
There were a lot of talk about that, about agents especially, that they had agreements and they put their players in the national team.
And Vanderlei Luxemburgo, did he not end up either inside or with charges for taking money for...
Vanderlei Luxemburgo, yes. Yeah. Yes, well, he has all types of charge. So,
right,
yeah,
okay.
Just put it on the list.
Okay. Right, excellent. Oh, go on, you have got some bad Brazilian players.
Okay, just about Roque Jr., he got a red card in his first match.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and he played five matches for Leeds. So, yeah, Not a great start. Jô from City at the time.
He was good though, wasn't he?
No, he did really well in Brazil. He was playing for Corinthians a while ago and... No, all these guys, they did really well in Brazil. They didn't get here for free, you know. And Jô was very expensive signing at the time. And he was kind of a disappointment in terms of, you know, delivering goals and stuff. Mm. And, everybody talks about Paulinho at Tottenham.
Yeah.
And it's very weird for us because Paulinho in Corinthians, he was such an amazing player. And he still get called up for the national team, but here it just didn't work. It's amazing, yeah. So that's all about
Joe. He is at least the player with the shortest name to score a Premier League goal. So he's got that forever, unless a one-lettered man.
I'll keep a note on that.
What about Afonso Alves? Who's quite legendary.
Oh my God! Yes.
Yeah, him.
Yes,
was he good
true.
In Brazil as well? He was good in Holland.
He didn't play in Brazil that much.
Ah.
And he was very questioned when he got called up for the national team because people really didn't know him.
Mm-hmm.
So he was very questioned by the Brazilians in general. But so was Firmino. and Firmino proved them wrong. So yeah.
I'm just about old enough to remember when Newcastle had Mirandinha as well, which was very exciting. Although I do remember the Newcastle fans, as a tribute to him, wore sombreros, which in the 1980s...
Oh my God, that's so wrong.
Yeah, but they thought they were... You know, they thought they were helping.
The intentions that count.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm. Most underwhelming, Robinho.
Yeah, I was going to mention Robinho because I don't think he was an embarrassment or anything like that. But I think there was a lot of expectation regarding him. And I think he didn't reach
He came through at Santos. And that he was kind of, because of the way he looked, I guess, there was some talk of him being, and because it was Santos, mm-hmm. him being another Pelé.
Yes, yes, exactly. Well, in Santos, they're always looking for the next Pelé, yes. But, and he did really well in Santos. He was very skillful, very fast, and very, you know, what you expect from a Brazilian player at the pitch. But I think it was sort of a letdown. He was always complaining about Manchester, that there was nothing to do in Manchester. I mean, just...
He used to go and hang out in, what is it, the Arndale Centre? That was his thing, apparently. So, I mean, if you're Robinho and you arrive in Manchester, I mean, it's a bit of a shock, isn't it? I'm sure a lot of Mancunians might struggle were they to go and kind of hang out in Santos. Possibly less, actually.
No, but I think it's just a matter of mentality.
Mm.
You know, you have so many... Carlos Tevez used to complain about the same thing about Manchester. But I think it's just a matter of mentality. You're there to play football, so just focus on that and... Enjoy your vacations when you have them.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. Can we talk about Kleberson?
Kleberson, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. On the same day as Ronaldo at United.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And didn't they have to wait to sign him till his girlfriend had reached 16, I think?
Yes, I remember that.
Really?
Yeah.
Iffy. I think it might just have been more about the sort of...
the optics.
Yeah.
I see. Okay. And what about Van Petter at Inter? Do you remember him?
Oh, my God.
I always thought that was the weirdest transfer. So he came with Ronaldo, with the phenomenon of Ronaldo.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah. Or with... Yeah.
Well, Van Petter is a big character in Brazil.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I think
wasn't he gay Brazilian's favorite footballer?
Yes. Yeah. And if you haven't seen Van Petter doing backflips on our... When Brazil won the World Cup in 2002, all the players were there to meet the president, and of course there was a lot of celebrating in the flight to Brazil, and it's a long flight, so you can imagine all the celebrating, all the drinks, all everything. So he just when he got there and you had the official picture, I think he bet with someone that he would just go. There was a ramp in front of the. Of our Congress, and he just thought it was a good idea to just...
So he did backflips?
Yes, yes.
In a suit?
Yes.
Fantastic.
No, yeah, you need to Google that.
Oh, right.
Yes. Martin Peters never did that, did he?
And also, on the subject of, Brazilian greats, so how is Ronaldo's health at the moment? Is he well? Has he got better?
He's well. Okay. He's well, yes. Hope.
Good.
Yes.
Excellent. All right. Well, that's probably enough bad and good Brazilians for now. That's almost it for this edition of the Totally Football Show. Although still to come, we're going to answer that all-important Schwarzenegger question and get the answer to Duncan's exciting head-scratcher about people who scored goals at all three of the 1990s World Cup. First, though, let's get odds on football things. Producer Ben in conversation with Paddy Power.
Thank you very much, Jimbo. Listeners, plump up a cushion. Lee Price is on the line all the way from Australia, and we are talking odds, and we are starting with Claudio Ranieri. He's the new man in at Fulham, but Lee, can he keep them up?
Oh, it's great to see Claudio back, isn't it? I do feel sorry for Jukanovic, sacked after just 12 games having got Fulham up. But dilly ding, dilly dong, welcome back, Claudio. It's great news for Fulham fans, and even better news for Fulham pizzeria owners. They are still odds on to go down, though, of course, but it's a fairly short price now, 7-5, that Ranieri keeps them up. Should he do that, it's 11-2 they finish above his old club, Leicester, in the Premier League next season. 750-1 that he repeats his title-winning miracle with the Foxes. Clearly, though, the odds suggest that they're more likely to go down, sadly. If they do, they're 7-1 to win the Championship next season, which put them front and centre amongst the favourites.
England versus Croatia, then, Lee, coming up on Sunday afternoon. Can you give us the first goal scorer market and the overall on this one, please?
An interesting one, this. I know England are semi-good again, but Croatia are good at semis, and that's what told at the World Cup. Despite that, we favour the hosts at 4-5 here, with Croatia 10-3 and the draw 5-2. As for the first goal scorer market, Harry Kane tops that at 13-5. His misses against Croatia in the summer still haunt me, so maybe put a few goes to bed on Sunday for him, and mostly for me.
And you got a money back special on this one as well, haven't you?
We do indeed. It's money back as a free bet if England win. Applies to losing first, last, anytime goal scorers, correct score and what odds Paddy markets. Max refund £10. T&Cs apply.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. Jim Barnett, in honour of Arnold Schwarzenegger's birthday in July. Hang on. All right, interesting premise. What's the panel's favourite Arnie film?
Can I be controversial?
Go on.
Kindergarten Cop.
Really?
Yeah, every
day
of the week.
Are you saying that for real?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen Kindergarten Cop.
Loved it as a child. Yeah, really, really good. Yeah.
Have you seen it since?
Give it a whirl. Probably, yeah, I reckon I probably saw it in my 20s and enjoyed it just as much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Duncan?
Probably going to go for Total Recall.
Really?
Because I think it was the first 18 I'd ever seen.
Uh-huh.
And I'm
How
sad.
Old were you?
Well, I'm sad to admit I wasn't 18 at the time.
Really?
I was younger than 18. Don't tell the old board of whatever they're called.
British Board of Film Certification.
Yeah, they'll get me. But, yeah, no.
I think the statute of limitations is your friend on that now.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. But, yeah, I've lived my life with that credos. Yeah.
What?
Total Recall.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah. Nice one. Nice one. Natalie, you a fan of Arnie?
You have to respect the man.
Yeah,
you know, yeah.
It's probably a good non-committal answer.
I love that you remembered Kindergarten Cop. Of course it's the best one.
Is it the best
one? Yes, of course it is.
Right.
It's a whole other side of him, you know.
Yeah, the comedy. Yes. I mean, for that, Twins was, you know, a little bit of a forerunner in terms of laying down his comic chops.
Yeah.
Producer Ben wants to go with Terminator 2. But, I mean, I would say Terminator 1 always...
Yeah.
Always. I mean, technologically and in terms of the FX, etc., Terminator 2 is groundbreaking with the T-1000 and that.
The
great Terminator stuff's in the first one. All the I'll be back, all the you asshole and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, just remember the guy that played the T-1000 then
Robert
played...
Robert Patrick.
The cop. Was it the cop or the store owner in The Sopranos?
Oh, I never finished watching The Sopranos. In fact, I've only seen one episode.
This is like my not watching The Matrix thing. How's that possible?
Well, because there's so much of it, and they keep making new TV shows. And, yeah, I've got to get back to it.
It's like Wire level.
Yeah, yeah, I know. No, believe me, it's been... I don't say that happily. That's right up there with not having a tattoo or owning a motorbike. That I've got to get that sorted out. Maybe on Friday. See how we do. Natalie, you're saying family-friendly Kindergarten Cop on that.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely, right. 100%.
Not sure it's family-friendly. Might have been a 15.
Is that right?
Mm.
Okay. Hopefully we've escaped the kind of controversy that followed our John Candy discussion. But yeah, we will be dealing with Planes, Trains and Automobiles really, really soon, listeners. You probably want the answer to Duncan's World Cup question. Duncan?
Yeah, the two players to score in all three World Cups in the 1990s.
All right, so listener, you definitely got Roberto Baggio, didn't you? I think we all did. Does anybody want to hazard a guess as to the other one?
Klinsmann?
Correct.
Oh, there you go. All right. Excellent. Well, that is it then for today's Totally Football Show. We return on Monday with France's Julien Laurent, Wales's Tom Williams and Nottingham's Daniel Storey very much on the panel. So that'll be exciting, looking back at all the action from... And looking forward to other action and also probably dealing with any other big things that happened over the weekend. I wouldn't rule it out. International break, fertile territory for upheaval. But many thanks for now to Natalie for joining us today.
Thank you.
Where else can people find you? On Brazilian TV, obviously. Brazilian ESPN?
Yes, ESPN Brazil.
Okay.
Yes, and on Twitter and on social media.
Have you got the weekend off at the moment?
No, because the Brazilian team's here, so yes.
You have to go to Milton Keynes on that.
Yes,
brilliant.
I do.
Okay, excellent. Matt, what will you be doing this weekend? Something eclectic, I hope.
Yeah, well, reasonably, it's actually English. I'll be doing some Football League highlights on Saturday, and then on Sunday, Chelsea against Yeovil in the WSL, and you can watch that for free on the WSL's Facebook page.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
2 o'clock kickoff on Sunday.
Yeovil, are they any better than they used to be?
They won their first game in, I think it was, 17 months. They beat Everton a couple of weeks ago.
Good Lord, with goals and everything.
Yeah, Yeah, wow. So good on him. A bit of a mismatch this, but Chelsea have had a pretty poor start to the defence of their title. So who knows? Maybe Yeovil could spring an upset, but it would be a mighty one.
When's that game on again?
It is 2 o'clock on Sunday.
Brilliant. And Duncan?
Well, I was going to go and see Sunderland v Wickham, but then I thought it was going to be moved for international call-ups.
No.
And then it wasn't. So
you can still go and see it?
Yeah, technically, but it's a long way away, isn't it?
Right. So, yeah. I saw Sunderland last weekend, as you know. Mm. Yeah, when they went at Port Vale. They were good.
Yeah, and also we'll lose, so, yeah.
All right. Oh, are you a Wickham fan?
I am, yeah.
Oh, because we had the Wickham manager, Gareth Ainsworth, with us.
Mm.
He's a lovely fellow.
He is. Yeah. He's a very good manager.
Did he explain what he was doing in that Camberley McDonald's until 4 o'clock in the morning?
That's not a question I asked him, I regret to say.
Yeah, on Twitter, somebody posted a video, a Wickham fan, a video of him and her and Gareth Ainsworth together at Camberley McDonald's at 4 a.m. And he...
It was after we'd beaten Peterborough, so it was quite a big win.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Necklace wasn't good. Not a good look.
He's not the only manager to seek solace in McDonald's. Marcelo Bielsa, famously, while in charge of Marseille, would retreat to his nearest, you know, golden-arched... eatery, and I'm not sure what he would do there. Not very much.
Big Sam?
Was it? Yeah, Big World Sam Cup. During the England game. Mm. Well, that wasn't a McDonald's, that was a pub, but it was with a hamburger, yeah. So technically that counts. Brilliant. Natalie, thank you, as I say, so much for being with us today. Look forward to seeing you again soon. Big Duncan, thanks to you.
Thanks, James.
And also Matt, and you, listener, most importantly. Do have a great weekend. Hasta la vista, baby.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com and be sure to check out our other football shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audio Boom, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts, and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really. And here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK. So that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.